The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning, ladies, gentlemen. Listeners, viewers, whoever's out there in radio land.
Like, are we just going to hear commercials all morning?
On a Sunday morning. You're joining We the People Radio. And I'm sure that you know that or you wouldn't be tuning in. And if you tuned in by accident, you're joining We the People Radio.
What a nice
with
accident.
Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and Bob Martin, our show producer and master of music. And God, pay attention to the songs.
Please tell me we don't have viewers.
We don't.
We don't have viewers.
I put makeup on this morning.
I was going to say, although you're looking snazzy.
Thank you.
Bob, you're looking snazzy,
I didn't
too.
Do makeup this morning.
Yeah, I'm mostly...
Glad to hear it.
Didn't either.
So, wow, you know, lots of stuff going on out there. It's amazing the conversations that I have with people. And you too, of course.
Yeah.
It's just... it's really interesting to talk to people these days. If you can engage them in a conversation... Really
interesting. So Elizabeth and I were trying to figure out what our guest is going to be talking about, because he seems to be kind of all over the map.
He is, too. You know what?
Really?
I don't know what he's talking about either.
Oh, all right. Good. I like surprises.
Uh-huh. Because I was like, well, he's done those. Did you guys read his bio?
Did we actually? You sent me about half a dozen emails, but I never got an actual bio. Did one finally?
It came through last night, so I bet it's on there right now. If we could actually log in. That location would be wethepeopleradio.us.
That's a great website. You'll find everything about today's guest, all of the archived shows from the last 3 years, and every one of them has an individual link to email out. It's very handy, and I encourage you to, you know, scroll through all of those shows and pick one out that grabs your interest. We've covered just about everything you can imagine under the umbrella of limited government, fiscal responsibility, and adherence to the Constitution. I mean, everything from technocracy to Agenda 21.
I forgot about technocracy. We haven't done that in a long time.
I mean, we've just done all kinds of stuff. U.S. trade. Everything having to do with the environment.
Yeah. I mean, all sorts of stuff.
We've covered everything.
But I haven't... you know, honestly, if you look back at our topics, almost all of them are still current.
Yeah, nothing's changed.
You know, we do announcements that are, you know.
Well, they're all still, yeah.
Date specific, but not everything.
But the topics are all still very relevant.
That's the problem.
Yeah, I know. They haven't gone away. So, you know.
That's a good point, Bob.
So it's kind of interesting. The Obamacare thing has been in the news big time. I mean, you just cannot get away from it. And it's really interesting because, you know, there's so many people that think that it's not going to have an impact on them. And it's really interesting because, okay, so, you know, Aaron and I always refer to our own family conversations because those are the conversations most of us have. So I have a niece who was in the Peace Corps. And then when she got out of the Peace Corps, she, you know, kind of migrated to Argentina to teach English. And, rumor has it that she's decided that she's going to stay there because of what's happening here.
Really?
Even though she voted for Obama. And not
so,
not
so
thinking,
she's doing like ring and ditch?
Pretty much.
nice.
Well,
now, did you help influence her thinking as far as what's happening in this country?
No, because she was
in Argentina.
She's in Argentina. So it's interesting because she very quickly realized that she could get her health care cheaper down there than she can here now. It would cost her
She doesn't think this country is liberal enough.
No. Yeah.
Well, she finally ran the numbers.
She ran the numbers and figured out, oh, my gosh, it's going to cost me a fortune for my health care. I'm going to stay down here.
No kidding.
Yeah. And
wow, that's brutal.
So let's face it, you know, I mean, how sad for her parents. When do they get to see her?
She's really,
that's a direct impact.
And that was an actual factor in her deciding not to come back? Wow.
Yeah.
Wasn't that she liked it so much there? It was just, you know, she looked at the cost of moving back here.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What's she going to do for work?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. College educated.
You broke it. You bought it, baby.
Yeah, that's right.
That's better than ring and ditch.
It was kind of interesting because she didn't think that a president could wield so much power. I mean, she was told all along, be careful for voting for him because, you know, he's got a pretty good agenda and he's going to do all kinds of stuff. Well, you know, one person can't do that.
Yeah, no.
She's not familiar with the executive order.
Well, she's also not familiar, as I don't think most people really understood until mm-hmm. this president, mm-hmm. about bureaucracy.
Right.
And who controls the bureaucracy,
right.
really, and who appoints the,
right.
by who appoints the heads of all the
That's right.
And
well, and she's young, and she's been gone more than she's been here, so,
yeah.
you know, her naivete, politically speaking, is apparent.
Well, I didn't get to tell you, I got a little snippet on gun control.
Mm-hmm.
You guys want to throw in a little gun control?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. When I was in Oakland,
a week ago, 10 days ago
or whatever mm-hmm. it was, I was in a congresswoman's office in a federal building, and she still had 2-inch glass thick.
Wow.
Okay. After we all got frisked and mm-hmm. all that jazz, right? We get done with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in the waiting room, and I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, really? What are they going to be attacked by pens and pencils?
You don't
have anything by the time you go through, right? So, you know, it's got this really thick bulletproof glass and like a little underneath the glass
sure.
where you put the paper
where
through
you slide or, things. Yeah.
you know, that
yeah.
kind of thing. But as I was sitting there waiting for the guy, I looked over in the corner of this mm-hmm. window of glass and there was a box built in. It was like the size of a loaf of bread.
Okay.
So not just a hole in the window, but like a long box. Like literally, if you put a loaf of bread in it, it would all fit in there.
Okay.
Like a big Wonder Bread
yeah.
kind of deal.
Yeah.
And had little doors on each end. And I thought, okay. You know, so I looked at the lady sitting next to me. I go, do you come here very often? And she said, oh, yeah, I've been here before. I go, what's with the box? Because, excuse me, it's me choking. The door was right next to the window. This office was tiny.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, why don't they just open the door and give you whatever it is? And she looked at me And I said, is it really, I mean, after we got frisked and everything, is it that big of a deal that they have to hand you stuff through the box? I mean, what kind of danger are we in sitting out here?
Yeah.
And she said, well, she kind of looked totally perplexed. And mm-hmm. she said, it's no different than the pizza place.
What?
I know. The look on your face is exactly that's what I said. I go, what are you talking about? She goes, it's just like the pizza place. It's just the box is smaller. I said, okay, I'm not from here, let me just, if I understand this correctly, you buy pizza here through bulletproof glass? She goes, well, yeah, they all have bulletproof glass. And she goes,
oh my God.
And then the pizza comes through a box like that, but it's shaped different, you know, so it fits a pizza. I go, well,
oh my God.
I said, are you kidding me? So you're standing in the pizza place with your back to the door and they're pushing you a pizza through a bulletproof glass window with like a bulletproof box underneath.
Wow.
So home delivery's out, I guess.
Apparently. What a way to live.
Yeah. So when you live in a city that has no guns, apparently that's what it looks like. A big
wow.
city with a lot of crime and all that jazz.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
But I thought if you took the guns from the law-abiding citizens that there would be no more guns.
I guess they're waiting for that part.
Oh, okay.
Because
I would think if you have a gun-free city, you would be safe, right? Isn't that the theory?
Pretty much. Well, I was up in Weed the other night for a thing with the Forest Service, and I told that story, and I looked out at the people, and I said, you know, how many people would even, I mean, we don't even have, like I told the lady, I said, we don't even have bulletproof glass in lots of our banks.
Yeah.
I mean, most of our banks don't have bulletproof
mm-hmm.
glass.
Mm-hmm.
The pizza place, if our pizza places showed up with bulletproof glass, people would, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
For those just tuning in, where was this again?
Oakland.
Yes.
18 miles from my mother's house.
Jeez.
I was like, don't buy any pizza in Oakland. It actually crossed my mind. It was a fleeting thought. I thought, I want to go there and see that. And then I thought, no, that's how you like get the Darwin Award.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, that'd be bad. But that's why they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they don't have the vaguest idea what we deal with up here.
Yeah.
Because honest to God, we don't have the vaguest idea what they deal with.
No, we really don't.
We live in really, really different worlds.
And that is a perfect illustration of the Jefferson, the State of Jefferson movement, because California is bigger than most countries.
Yep.
And it is so incredibly different from one end to the other, that how do you run a state that's basically completely different on both ends?
Yeah, and
meet the needs of all the people.
That kind of thing? I mean, if you live in a world like that, how could you possibly understand why it's a big deal to close the roads in the forest or not allow wood cutting? I mean, when was the last time any of those people did that? Never.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, never.
Yeah.
Bob?
Oh, that was Carl. He's having a hard time wrapping his mind around what you're talking about, as are most of us.
Yeah.
I know.
Getting pizza through bulletproof glass.
I know. And, you know, I was there for like, I don't know, like 45 minutes.
Wow.
And the whole time I went over and I like played with the door. Ding, 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 and I thought, you got to be kidding me.
And, well, you know, I do this damsel in defense, right?
Yeah.
And so I have these parties and there's always a bunch of ladies and
personal protection.
Yes.
Pepper sprays.
I got to tell you, I love it because we get into the most incredible conversations and people out there know things aren't right. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to these women tell you how much trouble they go to protect themselves, I mean, you've got women with, you know, I mean, they'll tell you about the dogs and the door alarms and the loaded shotgun by their bed. And I mean, the layers of protection in their homes. And, you know, I know that we've got a fantastic police chief in our area and a great sheriff, but they can only do so much. And they know, and these ladies know that law enforcement, their hands are tied now. We're kind of on our own.
Well, at the end of the day, the criminal meets you first.
Sure, they do.
They don't typically phone ahead.
And it was interesting because one lady, you know, over the weekend said that the CCWs here in our area in Shasta County, the earliest appointment that you can get to get your CCW is December.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's how intense this movement is for people to protect themselves. And really, I would much rather be in charge of my own safety than leave it up to somebody else anyway.
Well, yeah, any day of the week.
Yeah.
But for those people out there that, I mean, I get out of here a fair amount. I mean, I'm not stuck just in the rural part of our state all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us get out a little bit. Mm-hmm. I would never have known that.
Yeah.
And I mean,
I've been
back and forth to Oakland twice in the last, to that same building, actually,
mm-hmm.
in the last, I don't know, few months, two, mm-hmm. 3 months. But who would have thought?
Yeah.
Who would have thought, you know, getting pizza through a bulletproof window, you know, in a bulletproof box. They don't even give it to you through the bottom. Like, the bottom isn't even open, you know? And I thought, okay, what about seriously home delivery?
Yeah.
Is that what they use those little armored vehicles for?
Yeah, no
they go
kidding.
By and they drop them like a hamster pellet, you know, and then they drive off.
Yeah,
I don't know. That's a world I don't want to learn about.
How sad is that?
And they think it's normal.
Yeah, and that is your world without guns.
There was a little
kid. Without law-abiding citizens being armed. That's your world.
Well, you know, you look at...
what do you think it's like in Chicago and Detroit?
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine?
They probably had bulletproof pizza boxes.
I mean, what is a laundromat? Like, what does a laundromat look like?
I don't think they have them. Why would you have one? You'd be an idiot to go there.
Yeah.
It was interesting, though, because I looked at the little boy, and he was probably 10. I looked at him, I go, wow, all your pizza places? And he looked at me like, I mean... He was flabbergasted that I had no idea what they were talking about. That was super, super normal for him.
Oh,
so,
scary.
Yeah, pretty interesting. So, Kev,
Carl had one thing to pass along. Ted Leidy is conducting a women's only CCW class on November 9th and 10th.
Oh, is that part of the gun show? Carl's got his gun show on the 9th and 10th.
Oh, okay.
Called the Last Chance Gun Show.
Okay, well, Carl's going to call back in later.
Okay,
oh, good.
But he mentioned there are a couple of openings left in that particular class for women.
Oh, good. So keep listening and we'll get all the details for you.
Yeah.
So when we come back, we're so screwed up on time. When we come back, we are going to be joined by Scott Rockholm. And we'll give you a snippet on his bio when we come back. But you can read about it on the break at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back here at KCNR, 1460 AM.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. by just in this song of flows. I have to turn my head until my darkness goes.
And we're back. Hey, so I was in a doctor's office this week, actually having one of those damsel in defense parties on their lunch hour. And I asked the staff, I'm careful not to call it Obamacare. And I said, so how has the Affordable Care Act affected your business? And apparently, it actually has benefited them because they choose to take Medi-Cal patients. And the Affordable Care Act has expanded the Medi-Cal base.
Hmm.
However, let's say you've got a Medi-Cal patient, and they live 20 miles out of town, and they're pretty tight for funds, and they need to go see a specialist, and so they drive into town, and costs them a fortune in gas, and they go to their specialist. The specialist is only allowed to do one test a day. So if they have three tests that they have to run on a patient, that patient has to come back for each individual test.
Oh, that is super efficient.
Yeah, isn't that
but
neat?
But since they're only getting like $2.12 for an office visit, I guess that might make up the difference.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, that is bizarre.
Yeah.
See, and I switched doctors too because I picked a doctor that doesn't take insurance.
Oh, you did? Good.
Yeah, he'll bill. Mm-hmm. But bottom line is he doesn't actually, his business isn't predicated on insurance.
And so he bills the insurance company anyway?
He'll bill them. And, and whatever they pay, they'll charge me less. But, but bottom line is it's a cash deal.
Okay.
And so then if the regulations go berserk and, unless they outlaw that type of medicine.
Yeah, well, apparently there's nothing in the ACA that outlaws like concierge doctors, which is the new term. So there's a lot of doctors going that way.
If you ever watch Royal Pains, you know what concierge doctors are.
And what they do is they set you up on a payment plan, and you pay them a monthly fee based on your age. You get unlimited phone calls, emails, personal visits.
Yeah.
And then they basically charge you their cost on tests and prescription drugs. They don't
see this is just this is just basically a cash fee basis.
Yeah.
So in Reading, so that's mm-hmm. Dr. Richard Milwaukee.
Yeah, I'm aware.
Yeah,
of that. Yeah.
And his wife.
He's always been that way.
Exactly. And his wife never is my dentist. Been my dentist for a long time. She has a big bumper sticker. Mm-hmm.
Bless you.
Excuse me. She has a big bumper sticker on the back of her car about the debt.
Yeah.
And he's a hunter, so it's just, they check out all the way.
Yeah,
for folks like us.
Good.
They completely meet the high standard we set.
Good.
And require.
Yeah, excellent.
Oh, my gosh.
Our guest is on the line.
Nice.
Wonderful.
Okay, so I'm not going to read the whole thing that Scott sent, but for those of you who would like to read his entire bio, but he was born and raised in Nevada County, so in... in our state,
Gold
right?
Rush country.
Moved to Sandpoint, Idaho in 1993 after serving in the Army. Thank you for your service. And all our other veterans out there. Married his wife in 1993. He's got three girls. He works in heavy construction. I was going to skip down. He produced his first film. It's called Yellowstone is Dead in 2010. And he had nearly 80 short films produced for YouTube and social networks. So kind of way ahead of the curve that we're just getting into. But interesting interviews that he's done, hundreds of interviews. But I like here at the bottom it says, most of his work has been focused around liberty and freedom, helped draft legislation, HB 343, the Idaho Emergency Wolf Bill. It was drafted while wolves were federally protected under the Endangered Species Act. The bill passed by a supermajority in the House and Senate, testified in Senate hearings. And the bill was not only a victory of us working to end wolf protection, but it was a nullification of the federal government's wolf agenda, mm-hmm. which it totally is. And California is learning about that now. We're getting into that. But lots of places in the country are impacted by this. And then I'm sure we'll get a little information on this, but I thought this was super interesting that he did a ton of work on the Ron Paul campaign when he was a candidate for president and also interviewed Andrew Breitbart. And there are photos on there for those. But we've got all sorts of web links for you with the videos and all that jazz. Yellowstone is Dead. The trailer is on there. And I just noticed Robert stole the tagline off my emails. At the bottom of the webpage, it says, please note, all spelling errors are due to NSA shenanigans.
That's great.
You know what? If they want to be out front so much, we should just blame them. Blame. Feels good. Okay, so Scott is in there. He has volume.
Bob
doesn't have any volume. Hey, Scott.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Save Western Wildlife. I like your and Ghosts of the Rockies is what we called the show, but that was the name of one of your films, right?
That's the latest film I'm in production right now, producing.
Nice. Well, thanks for joining us. We didn't really talk about where we wanted to start
Are you in Idaho right now?
I am.
Okay, great.
Beautiful northern Idaho, about 47 miles south of Canada.
Yeah, how's the weather right now?
It's pretty cool. Balmy 28 degrees. It's nice.
Nice. That would be awesome. Interestingly enough, when I was at that public meeting on Wednesday up in Weed, we had Sheriff DeAugustini, the guy who kicked the feds out of his county down there in El Dorado. And he was up. Sheriff Lopey asked him to come, and there was a guy that came up to him afterward and said, "Hey, I really wanted to hear you speak." Mm-hmm. He said, "This will be the last official thing I do. I'm on my way out of California. I'm moving to Idaho."
Wow,
that was
a lot of people move here from California.
Yeah,
we met some of your new residents.
Yeah, and I met a woman and her husband and daughter the other night that are heading to Coeur d'Alene on November 1st.
Mm-hmm. The exodus has been pretty consistent, but I think it's ticked up here recently. All right, so where do you want to take us, Scott?
Well, I suppose we can start out with how I ended up getting involved in wolves. This is kind of an interesting part of my life. I was elk hunting one year after many years of success, and had poor success the first time I noticed the wolves were impacting my personal area. And this story is can run side by side with many of the liberty issues that I've been involved with, because as a human being, we tend not to get involved until it affects us personally. So I'm ashamed to say that I did nothing to stop this wolf infestation of our state until it was upon me. So having said that, in 2006, I was elk hunting, and I tend to hunt by myself with a bow, and I noticed some extreme differences in the behavior of elk. And after an unsuccessful season, I went to the Fish and Game Department here in Idaho, in Coeur d'Alene, and I asked the biologist, the head biologist in that department, what's going on here? So we're having some pretty deep predation issues going on in my elk zone. What's going on? And he basically shrugged me off, blew me off like I was nobody. I knew we were having wolf impacts, but I didn't realize the scope, how large it was. So the following winter, I went into an area that we recreate a lot in the mountains in the wintertime on our snowmobiles, and I noticed a basic killing field, and it was several moose that had been killed. And I went to the Department of Fish and Game again, and I said, look, we've got a severe problem in this one drainage. It seems like a small area, but I guess if you compare it to areas in California that are uninhabited, this is a huge area. It's uninhabited, Forest Service managed ground, and it was being hammered by two packs of wolves. Again, the department blew me off, basically insinuating that I was a windshield biologist, just a hunter, and I knew nothing. I was an idiot. I was not up to their level of understanding how things should be. And then, of course, with my personality, that rubbed me wrong, and I began to dive into the biology of wolves and the science behind wolves. And it was very quick. It didn't take me too long to realize, and this is through the help of many people that were involved at the time, and I didn't really connect with them at first when I was trying to seek out information on the internet. But I had help from other folks that had already been involved in trying to stop this. John Walters of the Anti-Wolf Coalition, John Renee Walters. They helped me understand a lot of the issues surrounding wolf introduction, the politics of it, bringing them into the state. And Robert Fanning of the Northern Yellowstone Elk Herd, Toby Bridges, several other people that I'm leaving out, but I was quick to jump in and become very educated on the whole wolf issue. And it's basically what it boils down to is politics. It's wolves and animals in general, from what I learned, are used as an anvil to break, to literally break the backs of the communities that are suffering under that protection. And wolves, what I uncovered was, wolves are the means by which they are going to depopulate an area. And it doesn't seem possible by simply making that blanket statement, but when you understand wolves and how they implemented it, the whole program, and the history of wolves in America, let alone the world, then you understand how they're going to implement wolves as an anvil to break the backs of the people. They kill entire communities' economic system because Idaho's base was hunting, outdoor activities. And when you kill hunting and you kill the opportunity to harvest large game, you destroy the community's economic ability to, let's say, draft people from other states to come hunt. Local hunters that would spend several hundred dollars in a community, and those small restaurants and small communities scattered throughout Idaho have and are at this very moment being completely crushed economically. And then you have other issues like the wolves entering our communities, which they are now. So way back when this is 2006, 2007, when I began to film, my momentum picked up when I grabbed that camera and I started putting it down on film. And when I started putting it out there for people to say to themselves after watching, saying to themselves, hey, that happened in my community too.
Yeah.
Hey, that's happening to me. That's I'm seeing the same thing in my community. See, before, the way we were overtaken by wolves in Idaho was because we were fragmented. Nobody communicated from one community to the next, and they couldn't put their head around how massive this problem was.
Well, and
so
they
that's
never,
where I started.
They never see it as an agenda either.
No, yeah. you can't. You're too busy trying to reel from the effects of wolves.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And once you have them, once they're upon you, it's like cancer.
Yeah, yeah. It just rips through. It's the guy in John Williams up in Eastern Oregon. He said, you know, I listened to him speak to a large group of people up in Butte County, and he said, you know, at the beginning it'll be a benefit because they have way too many elk where they are. They've just been allowed to completely overpopulate. And he said, you know, it'll be a little bit of a benefit at the beginning because it'll cut back on your elk problem. He said, but it's a little bit like an avalanche. You know, by the time you figure out what the roar is, you're buried. And you'll never get out because you'll never dig out. It's too massive. Hey, I think we better take where are we, Bob? Are we screwed up on breaks? Since I have no phone.
We're
good?
We're going to take one last break this hour.
Nice. We did all the commercials at the front, Scott, because we were tardy. Okay, I was tardy.
And I almost was.
So anyway, sorry for derailing you there. Okay, back to the avalanche.
Well, the way they employ this method, what I learned early on, was they used the rules for radicals. It's Saul Alinsky's 12 rules for radicals. And once I realized that, once I recognized that, hey, the enemy is employing through several tools that they had at their disposal created by the federal government, they could completely crush us by using those tools. Any arguments that popped up in community meetings were quickly squashed by the enemy by employing some of those rules. By ridiculing, let's say, a lifelong hunter who knew the woods better than anybody, who spent more time in the woods than any biologist. He or she knew their environment better than the environmentalists themselves, but the environmentalists would ridicule that person recognizing the effects of wolves and basically labeling that person a windshield biologist. That would be one of the rules that they used from Rules for Radicals. The federal government employs all of the science. They finance it. They completely control all of the science, especially when you're talking about wolves. But they also supply the funding through the Pittman-Robertson excise tax money in the form of grants to fish and game employees who are products of the university system, what is the indoctrination station. That's what gives these folks the talking points and the direction for their 20 years of work in wolves or ungulates or, you know, deer, elk, moose, whatever you want to use. But when they control all that information, once I realized that they controlled all of the information coming to us in the form of facts to support wolf introduction, I knew I could break that. I knew I could break it through film, prove it.
Yeah,
so I did. I went out and I filmed hundreds of hours of footage of the number one claim is that wolves balance nature. And the theory of natural balance itself is still employed in California right now. I went to the website and looked under the California Department of Fish and Game's website, and they employ it. They word it differently, but they're saying, look, they will reduce elk populations to reduce the impacts on human activity. And that's what you just spoke about earlier. They don't, and I proved it in film. They will sterilize everything, and then they move on. And the theory was created by L. David Meach, who has since come forward, and this PhD has come forward, and reissued a statement saying that the theory of natural balance is not true. He was wrong. And the whole premise or the whole foundation for wolf introduction is that theory.
That we can,
so everything built from 1980 to today was built on the theory of natural balance. And the whole theory was wrong. So the whole theory of wolf introduction is wrong. It will kill your communities. It will impact humans. Mm-hmm. It will create stress in unimaginable impacts to ranchers and anybody that has anything to do with the outdoors.
Tell us that guy's name again, the PhD.
L. David Meach. He is referred to as the world's foremost wolf biologist.
Wow.
He's akin, in my opinion, to Farley Mowat. And Farley Mowat wrote a story that turned into a movie, which is probably the basis for most of the emotionally intoxicated urbanites who believe that wolves are fluffy puppies running through green fields and they live in harmony and talk to the deer. That's what dealing with.
What was the name of his thing?
I'm sorry?
The Farley Mowat guy. What was the name of his?
I said off the top of my head, I can't remember what it is. It was like Into the Wild or something. It was something about living in Canada with wolves, and he went up there by himself, and it was just the craziest.
It was something that actually just doesn't happen? Or is he like all these people who want to be lion tamers, so they get in the cage with them, and then, you know, they wind up being snacks?
The whole movement itself, the worship of wildlife, and I don't, you can insert any animal into it. Started out in California with the spotted owl.
Right.
But you can insert any animal, and the people that follow or worship that line of thinking on whatever animal you have are emotionally attached. They have a sickness, and they cannot distinguish between reality and facts. They simply cannot. And that is the army that the groups like Defenders of Wildlife, Wild Earth Guardians, the Sierra Club, they tap into that. They know they can get $19 a month from an emotionally intoxicated urbanite that has a expendable income to just shove money at a warped sense of thinking. And that's who we fight every day, and the politicians are terrified of that group of people.
Yeah, they really are. That's a good point. But you know, at the end of the day, there really aren't that many of them.
Well, no, and
no,
that's
no,
the,
there,
that's
there are
the,
very few.
That's the freaky part. But they control a load of money.
Yeah, you've got this little teeny tiny fringe minority.
Yep. Well, for all their talk about natural this and natural that, they're very, very moneyed up.
Yeah.
Typically. All right, we need to take a really swift break. We'll be right back with Scott Rockholm.
And we're going to get into a lot of this stuff that he's got in his film. I would encourage you to at least go click on the link and watch the beginning.
Yeah, it's really very well done.
Yeah, Ghost of the Rockies. You will like it. All right, we'll be right back here on KCNR 1460 AM.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. Was looking for the place called Lee Ho Fooks. Gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein.
Good choice, Bob. Hey, so we're talking to Scott Rockholm. And Scott, on our webpage, wethepeopleradio.us, there is a very detailed biography and photos and videos. Everything you need is right there. But may I point out that you bear an uncanny resemblance to Andrew Breitbart. Because your pictures are side by side. I'm like, oh my gosh, they could be brothers.
Yeah, it actually looks like before he shaved.
Yeah.
And then after he shaved.
Yeah, it looks like you look like Andrew Breitbart without a beard.
Yeah, you kind of do.
That's a great compliment. Thank you.
Oh, and I want to encourage people to go to our Facebook page, We the People Radio. We've had tons and tons and tons and tons of likes lately.
I know. It's been kind of busy over there.
Yes, it has been.
And we're We the People Talk on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
For what that's worth. The stuff goes by so fast, how do you know what anybody says?
Yeah, exactly.
Unless it just drains the battery on your phone. Anyway, I'm just not loving that format. I do like the shortness of the format, but anyway, it's time-consuming. All right. So Scott, as you started digging into this, and you started seeing who was behind everything, and started making film, who came after you first?
Oh, wow.
I figure it was probably like a race, right?
Well, see, at first, see the our enemy, which is the I call them wolf pimps or
wolf pimps. I like that. That's good.
The people that promote wolves or what have you. And then the emotionally intoxicated urbanites attacked me on YouTube first, and that's where it began. And on YouTube or on social media and on the internet was a literal army of people that were putting out misinformation of wolves. And so I set out to correct that and stop the misinformation so I can maybe get a grasp on what's going on. Those folks were rabid wolf supporters that made death threats, that continually threatened to kill me, to come to my home, set my house on fire, rape my wife and my daughters, you name it. And it's the most vile and disgusting dialogue that I've ever had to endure. So then I realized quickly that some of these folks had to have been either paid or worked for some of these groups. They spent all of their time on the internet. It never seemed like they went to work, and they were on at night, on in the morning, at all hours of the day. And I don't know if I would call it popularity, but people knew who I was, and I became to be more of a force in the fight. And started, especially after Yellowstone is Dead was produced, then I had the government officials coming after me, and one being one of the Idaho Fish and Game commissioners, which is a very powerful position in Idaho, had made death threats to shoot me in the head because I was forcing Idaho Fish and Game to admit their participation in wolf introduction itself. And I was chiseling away at Idaho Fish and Game pretty good until this guy in a power position was threatening to kill me.
Wow.
So it's on all levels. And anytime you carry the torch of truth and you have the personality that I do, where you're not going to give up no matter what, I mean, they're going to come after you.
I know that personality. And,
I'm sorry?
I said I know that personality. My parents had five of those.
Five? That's great. Well,
The funny thing is I mentioned earlier, Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals. Rule number one, power is not only what you have, but what the enemy thinks you have. And that's what I was up against. It seemed at first like they had a huge army of people, that hundreds of thousands of people supported these wolves. And when I say support, you have to encapsulate support equals the destruction of all human activity, period. Economic, hunting, fishing, anything that we cherish in our heritage, that's what they equated wolf introduction to. So it seemed like I was up against a huge enemy. And when it boils down to with the work between myself and others that I network with and work with closely up here in the Northern Rockies, we've destroyed them. And we found that it's a very small amount of people. Let's say, for instance, one law that I want to see repealed, and I want to see it ended soon, and it will help California and every other state, is equal access to justice. That law is the financial tool that the environmentalists, they call themselves environmentalists, they're preservationists, they're anti-human, but that's what they use to destroy our communities using taxpayer money to do it. And it also opens up the gateway to using other animals as the anvil, like Wolverine. And you can go down a long list. They have it all planned out, how they're going to do it. But they use taxpayer money to do it. Equal access to justice is nothing more than a financial bank account for law firms that pose as environmental action agencies.
Boy, you know, and it's just amazing how everybody out there just wants our money. And they come up with the best ways to take it.
Well, the part that blows my mind is that they already have it. You know, so somehow we can't fill potholes and, you know, we're all in a dither about what we're going to do with, you know, Social Security and this and that and the other. We've got a million things to do. And yet the environmental, do you have any ideas, Scott, what the numbers are on some of that?
As far as dollar amounts?
Yeah.
It's in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
I know it's just gigantic, but that's not a
good number. I would say
that
it's close to $300 million between the preservation groups that work together. They communicate well together. They just siphon millions upon millions of dollars from the Land and Water Conservation Trust Fund and many other places. It's incredible.
It is incredible, and we see that in all sorts of facets. Like, for instance, and this is, you know, obviously a different issue, but the same basic idea. California Air Resources Board was fining our military installations in California for, you know, violations of emissions. Oh, you know, if their backup generators kicked on, like the missile defense systems that have redundant generator systems that have to be tested, you know, and they go off randomly. Anytime those kicked on, the California Air Resources Board expected to be notified. And if they weren't notified, then there was a fine levied. Well, at one point, they fined a military installation here in the state $931,000.
Of course, that's our money.
So, do you think they were doing a little fundraising on the federal government?
Sure.
You know? So, there was actually a note put into the... an amendment put into the appropriations bill that the Department of Defense would no longer be allowed to pay them for those fines so they could fine till hell freezes over, but you can't pay them. But there's all sorts of stuff like that going on, and the environmental movement tapped into that early on.
They're frauds.
But using our tax dollars to fight ourselves. And landowners, okay, so what'd you find up there with the landowners? They've got to raise money and try to get educated and do all the, they're doing everything from scratch while these other guys are holding all the cards. And then they lose.
In the end, yes, that's the plan. You bleed the individual into submission until they finally just give up and sell it all. And then who walks in to buy it? Groups like Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. They'll buy that land to preserve for elk, and within 5 years they turn it over to another government agency. Or possibly not even Elk Foundation, but the, let's say, Conservation Trust in your state.
Nature Conservancy.
Conservation easements.
Land Trust.
Yes. Yeah. It's all part of the bigger plan. They're just gobbling up land,
creating massive heartache to the people.
Sure. And then it's basically our tax dollars paid for it, but we're not allowed to use the ground. We get locked out at the end.
I love how we're paying to lock ourselves out.
Yeah, usually we get locked out pretty early. Mm-hmm. They used to go for a while. Oh, this is going to be managed now by these guys. Now they just lock you out.
Mm-hmm.
Do they do that up there where you are? Lock you out right away?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And the other important thing to look at when you're talking about those pieces of land being locked up, they're removed from the tax rolls. Any place that they want to deem to be a wild and scenic area or they want to preserve for some wildlife habitat automatically is removed thousands upon thousands of acres every year from the tax base.
Yeah.
Furthermore, increasing the tax burden on the people.
Of mm-hmm. course, and making it impossible to live there. We're going to get to the agenda part of this when we come back with Scott in the second hour. And I would encourage you, go to wethepeopleradio.us and check out his site. you can't miss the Ferris Bueller.
And I might point out that the chat room is...
alive and well?
Yeah, they're talking a lot about food.
Nice. If you click on the listen button, you can join the chat. We will be back with you in 5 minutes after the news break.
KCNR, Shasta Redding.
Hour two of We the People Radio. Go to wethepeopleradio.us to find out about today's guests. And an archived link to every show we've ever done. We are all things fiscal responsibility, limited government, and adherence to the Constitution. And you are joining your hosts, Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and Bob Martin.
Nice. You're so much better at that than I am. When I'm stuck here by myself, they don't learn any of those things. It's like, tune in next week so Elizabeth can tell you all the stuff.
And call us.
You know what we do at the top of the hour? Aaron was demonstrating eyeball exercises.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, can you cross your eye and then pull the other one out?
Yeah, she was... just in time
for
Halloween.
It's not good for radio.
Just in time for Halloween.
Yeah, not a good stunt for radio.
No, because you can't see. You just kind of have to take our word for it. That was really funny. I asked... She's doing all these eyeball things, you know, showing us what she can do and all these facial...
I was just talking.
And I said, how old are you?
I'm 10.
It's...
Well, I observed that she does this thing where her eyeballs completely disappear.
And Bob loves that. I don't know why, but he does.
It's kind of
weird, Bob.
We have issues, which explains our Sunday morning time slot.
Yeah, that's why they have us early on Sunday morning, where they hope no one will notice.
No one calls. They don't want to be affiliated. People are like, oh, God, if we call in, they'll know who we are.
And if you want to be associated with us, the number is 530-605-4567.
Speaking of that, giving out the phone number usually helps, too.
We're talking to Scott Rockholm.
Poor Scott.
And Scott's bio and all of his videos, well, not all of them, but a couple of really great ones are on wethepeopleradio.us, right on the front of the webpage that Robert Extra does for us every week. And Scott, we have to say we're really impressed with the quality of your films.
I mean, the Ghost of the Rockies thing, the beginning of that is awesome, like with the smoke, and then the very first picture you show is a giant dead something. Since I don't have any sound, I can't tell what it is because it's dead. But, I mean, you go right to the blood and guts right at the beginning. I don't know.
That's really good.
I like the direct approach. Big fan.
Well, in Ghosts of the Rockies, the point of that film is to show the world that Wolf Introduction was a criminal enterprise based on scientific fraud. And I think that when you had Jim Beers on, I think he probably touched on some of that.
That's been a while ago.
I'm sorry?
It's been a while ago. So you know, feel free to...
Okay. Well, first of all, in Ghost of the Rockies, I knew that I had to focus on one area of Wolf Introduction because you end up in a whirlwind of information that people can't digest. They don't have the ability to consume that much information, especially with respect to Wolf Introduction itself. And wolves that were brought down from the Northern Rockies way up in Canada, some 900 miles away, were used as a tool to rapidly diminish the elk population. That was some of the goal of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Ed Bangs specifically. But then I uncovered with the help of a piece that came out in the Outdoorsman, written by George Doble, that Idaho Fish and Game signed a permit at illegally. He's an Idaho Fish and Game director, Jerry Conley, in 1994-95, signed a permit to allow the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to bring wolves into Idaho. He was instructed prior to writing that illegal permit not to participate in wolf introduction by the legislature of Idaho. He did it anyway. But furthermore, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service had no permit whatsoever. They needed the permit of the Idaho Fish and Game to act as a Trojan horse to get those wolves in Idaho. This wolf has a completely different hunting characteristic, breeding characteristic. Everything about the wolf that they brought us was different. But more importantly, Idaho had a recovering population of resident wolves already, which means the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service violated the very law they're charged to protect, the Endangered Species Act. And any endangered animal that is already recovering must be protected at all costs under their rules. But what they did was bring down a bigger, meaner, more prolific breeder and dumped them on top of Canis lupus erymotus, which was our resident wolf in Idaho. So right there, in that very action, they broke the law on many levels. But then they continued to cover up the effects of wolves, wolf predation on the wildlife. The Department of Fish and Game in Idaho worked in concert with the U.S. Feds to cover up 15, 16 years of damage, not only in Idaho, but in Yellowstone. The Northern Yellowstone elk herd numbered 20,000 elk. 20,000 elk are down to probably 2,000 elk now. That's a huge reduction. So in my films, I try to show that this is a criminal enterprise. It's based around lies, and it has many, many levels to the desires of the people involved to advance their careers. It's for money. It could be for a number of reasons. But the federal workers, like, you know, I'm going to throw names around that people probably don't even recognize, but Doug Smith, he's the Wolf Project leader in Yellowstone. And he basically has participated for over 20 years in this because it's his job. He is told from higher-ups to push it, to push wolves and humanize it, make it, you know, wolf families and do all these things. But this guy is a career federal worker that is just doing his job. There's no science. There's no facts. There's nothing attached. In my film, not only am I going to focus on the crimes that occurred prior to wolf introduction, but the crimes that occurred over the last 16 years. And I need to point out, all of the people that were responsible for wolf introduction, like Doug Smith, like I mentioned before, he's a beaver biologist. He's a beaver biologist. One of the other head folks of the wolf introduction program was a bat biologist.
Oh, nice.
And these people were elevated to a level that was going to destroy billions, with a B, billions of dollars in wildlife and livestock.
And so when you faced, you know, when you brought that to the forefront and they were faced with that information, I mean, I know that the tactic is always, you know, marginalize, malign, mm-hmm. You know, and then just outright lie about them. But how did they refute any of that? Or did people just not pick up on it? How did they sidestep it?
Well, the people in charge, what I've realized is that they shift their tactics. In Idaho, we very seldom have public meetings now for the Fish and Game that are engaging. You can no longer have a comment period. What they do is they'll hold an open house, so you can't really directly ask the department about anything, about their management strategy or anything. So now what they've done is they've adjusted. The feds have done the same thing. And the federal delisting process that's going on right now, with the exception of the two-week hiatus they just received, they are working in major metropolitan areas to hold hearings on wolves that will never affect the folks that live in those areas. So when they have their federal delisting process meeting in Sacramento. Sacramento doesn't have wolves. They don't care.
Right.
So what are you going to get for comments? You're going to have an army of wolf pimping or urbanites that are just in love with wolves. They're going to show up and they're going to give their opinion. And whatever those opinions come out to as far as the outcome of all of them combined will be the consensus of the government. So the government's going to say, okay, the public wants wolves. But basically, they're just trampling states' rights, individual rights, by doing so, because the people of Sacramento or Denver, Colorado, or anywhere back east is deciding on policy that's destructive in my community. So what they do is they shift their tactics. They can, because they're financed by us, they can do whatever they want. Scott Rockholm has to go to work every day, and he doesn't have time to go to a meeting on Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. But all of the people involved in wolves do and can.
Yeah, and we've noticed that the wolf meetings are moving farther and farther south. You know, the last one was in Sacramento. And
making it really tough for people.
Nothing up here where people are going to deal with them. By the time wolves have shoved everybody all the way to Sacramento,
mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. It happens pretty fast. Like, I haven't watched the film Yellowstone is Dead. I know you sent us one. Which one were you sending us? You were going to mail it to me?
I haven't sent it out yet, sorry.
That's okay, but which one was it?
That was Yellowstone is Dead.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, the premise of Yellowstone is Dead is, I'm assuming, Yellowstone as we know it
mm-hmm.
is dead.
Yellowstone is a biological desert.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Oh, that's sad.
Because I was there as a kid.
So what happens is the assumption by, or I guess the narrative put out by the federal government that wolves balance nature and rabbits are talking to wolves and everybody's happy and is completely destroyed by my film, because as wolves produce, if they have abundant wildlife to feed on, they will multiply at 50%. So it's akin to credit card debt. It's compounding every year.
Sure.
So as those wolves move out of the park, they start impacting the rancher. They start impacting the people. And they're in your communities. They're running down the streets. They are in my home here in North Idaho. My children have never been able to ride their bicycle down the driveway.
Oh, wow.
Imagine that.
Because they can't get that far away from the house?
Because I have wolves on my place every single, well, I wouldn't say every single day, but on a fairly frequent basis.
Well, you know, it's funny because here in California with AB 109 and those types of predators, our kids already can't play out in the front yard. Yeah. So, you know, we've got predators coming at us from all directions.
Yeah, well, that's the most ridiculous. That is the policy that the nation should look at as far as failures. The protection of mountain lions is just incredible.
Yeah.
Well, we can't look at, we don't seem to take any lessons from Detroit or Chicago or any of these other players, Oakland with their bulletproof pizza, parlors. But, letting our criminals out in the cities. And I guess I don't know if they notice, to tell you the honest truth. I think as long as the media doesn't really report
mm-hmm.
any uptick mm-hmm. in crime and people mm-hmm. don't see it themselves,
yeah.
I don't think they notice. I think we obsess on that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's what's happened with wolves. They've basically gone unreported. Any incidents that happen to humans is isolated and kept in those localities. So one community cannot communicate with the other as far as wolves are concerned. That's what we did, is we created a network through Save Western Wildlife, and I used to have a couple of other wolf sites on Facebook where I could let people know and put out as much information as possible. For instance, I dug up 1,400 cases, 1,400, and I didn't even scratch the surface, of fatalities caused by wolves. Now, the narrative from Defenders of Wildlife on hundreds of sites on the internet is that in the last 100 years, no healthy wolf has attacked a human. Well, I'm here to tell you that I'm one of those people that was attacked. And I know for a fact that is untrue. So then my research tells me it doesn't only happen it increases, and the severity gets even worse. One case I found in Russia. In Russia alone, a party, I think in 1880, a party of 120 wedding participants, or, you know, the procession, was leaving the reception and going to the home of the bride and groom in sledges, those really low sleds drawn by horses. Out of the 120 people that were riding on a trail to the home, a pack of wolves came over the hill, a huge super pack, and killed all but two.
Holy, where was this?
In Russia.
Oh, my God.
I dug up the article in the New York Times, I think it was 1889.
Wow.
Every year in Russia, every year, probably every month, Russian villagers are killed. That is a fact. But the federal narrative and the narrative of the wolf pimps is that, no, they won't. They're shy.
Yeah.
That is a lie. When a wolf is hungry, they're going to capture and kill whatever it is they want to feed on. I don't care if it's a human being or not.
Well, they're like a top-of-the-line predator.
Apex.
Apex, yeah.
Well, and yes. Getting back your livestock, but getting back your wildlife and bringing that all these people that are so hung up on, you know, protecting every insect we've ever even thought about having. You know, we're down here in California protecting fairy shrimp. I don't even know what that is, but apparently if you have more than three drops of water that coalesce, you get a fairy shrimp. And, you know, we're protecting stuff like that.
Many jokes.
And exactly. I know, the bathroom bill, huh? Yeah, they were talking about bison. Oh. Of course, the jokes and the thing all started about the bathroom bill. You'll get that one later. But, yeah, they don't take into account any of this stuff, that this just decimates all the other wildlife that they supposedly... And where are the animal rights activists? That always kills me, too. You know? All the animal
Never
rights
about
activists...
The animal.
They're completely missing in this dialogue as well. Oh, all right, we better take a really quick break. We'll be right back with Scott Rockholm. And if you have questions, shoot them to us in the chat room. You can get there from... If you don't have a good stomach, though, you shouldn't go to the chat room. So it's gotten kind of out of hand. It's at wethepeopleradio.us. We're here at KCNR, 1460 AM, and here comes our favorite song.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies, twisted my
Mama, there's wolves in the house. Mama, they won't let me out. Mama, they're mating at night. Mama, they won't make night.
We're back. I want to know who all the people are in the chat room. Are those friends of yours?
That was creepy and spooky, Bob. What the heck was that?
That's Phosphorescence with a song called Wolves.
Oh, man.
Excuse me, Phosphorescent.
Well, like I would go look them up and listen to them.
Okay, Scott, we think that they're your friends in the chat room. They're funny.
The chat room has gone wild, Scott. You've sparked a whole new level of conversation.
All about beavers, actually.
Yeah, the beaver thing. We got stuck there. Hey, somebody did on a serious note, because this is really the ugly part, the disease factor. And that's the part the government doesn't want to talk about either. Did you cover that in your, or have you covered that in your films?
Scott, are you in there?
Ruh-roh. Bob, did we lock Scott out?
I'm sorry, I had it on mute there for a
minute. Oh. It was like somebody muted somebody.
I was drinking coffee and I didn't want you to hear me slurping. So.
Oh, we're good with that.
Yeah, we don't care.
Yeah. No, the whole disease thing, because that's a huge, huge issue.
And it's a massive issue.
Yeah, and it doesn't stay with just the just the wolves. I mean, it goes to everybody's animals and goes to people, I'm sure, at some point.
First thing to understand when we're dealing with the federal government is understand that there are operatives within the federal government that are placed inside state governments that will help them advance their agenda. Wolf introduction at the time when they brought them down, they trapped the wolves in the Mackenzie Valley in British Columbia and brought them here. Under the law, they are to treat those animals for any diseases, test them, hold them in quarantine, and then they can, if agreed to, they can release them. Well, I uncovered in my investigation that they did no such thing. They tested for rabies.
Mm-hmm.
They gave them a shot for rabies, but they never followed up with a booster. They held them in quarantine in Idaho for less than a week and released them. They never tested them for Echinococcus granulosis, which is a tapeworm, very deadly to humans and livestock, also infects your wildlife. So as the wolves, to understand how wolves locate themselves in certain geographical areas based on the herd sizes and the available food, when they reduce the wildlife to a point where they're traveling on ranches where cattle operations or sheep operations or horse operations occur, those animals are feeding on the ground where the wolf feces will be. And the high-data tapeworm eggs lie in that feces for months, dormant, and become airborne and enter through the nasal cavity of the animal feeding on the ground. But even worse than that, the cattleman with his dogs out there in the field trying to cope with the effects of having the constant pressure from wolves on his herd, his dogs will be out there, and when they find the wolf feces, they'll roll in it. That's what dogs do. They roll in the feces and then enter your home, run into the house, and roll on your carpet or maybe play with your young child where there, too, you were infected. So early on, the only way that they could get past this, as we were starting to bring this forward, Bob Fanning and Jim Beers actually brought this forward first, was the agenda to change the reporting requirements from the CDC. And the Idaho veterinarian at the time, I believe it was 2003, removed Echinococcus granulosis from a reportable disease. Up until that point, it was always a reportable disease to the CDC.
No kidding.
Yes.
So they just take it off the radar, so then if it's happening, no one will notice that it's basically...
And there's humans that have it at this moment. They have high data disease. They have cysts attached to their livers.
Ew.
Where... in some cases, half of your liver has to be removed. It's very similar to cancer.
And so...
This will probably blow up on a larger scale in the next 4 to 5 years, and more people realize that they don't actually have a sickness like cancer. They have high-data tapeworm, or high-data disease, caused by Echinococcus granulosis.
And how would people know if they have it? Like, what is it? I know you said it grows on their liver, but...
Well, it'll grow on your liver or lungs. It also will grow on your brain. You can type in on a Google search, echinococcus, and you can find videos where they remove that high-data cyst. It would be the size of a small basketball from your brain cavity.
Oh.
And how would you know? The abdominal pain, very similar to a lot of other ailments, and the problem with removing echinococcus from a reportable disease is that the physicians out there do not stay up on these kind of diseases. So they're going to misdiagnose them or maybe miss them until it's too late.
Okay, that makes sense. So how do people fight back on that?
At the moment, there's no way to fight back.
Hmm.
This is a spread of a disease that cannot be stopped right now.
Yeah.
The symbolic hunting seasons that we have up here aren't even killing 1% of the population of wolves. So as the wolves expand into, you know, other states like Oregon and Washington and others even further south into Utah and California, not only by natural methods but by mechanical methods by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they're going to naturally spread even further. And as our wildlife is infected and our, God forbid, our herd, our food supply, like cattle and sheep are infected, it's just, the whole thing is going to come crushing, crashing down upon us. It's huge.
Yeah, because everything hits a tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
So this
unfortunately, the damage will be so severe. I mean, I don't think that you can sell beef to Japan if they're infected with high data tapeworms.
Yeah.
So do they test for that?
Not at the moment, but we are. Well, there are some down the sand, and I have a very good friend of mine, Tim Kimmery, working on that right now. And he works at a salmon chalice area of southeast Idaho.
Okay.
And samples are being sent off to labs outside of the state of Idaho because the labs here in Idaho are corrupt and they can't be trusted.
That's the trouble when the government gets a hold of all the science.
That's right. That's right.
You know. Had somebody just asked in the chat room, if hunters kill a wolf, can they get the EG if they touch the wolves?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Almost all of the pictures that you see of wolves that have been killed, the hunter is generally has the wolf in a bear hug.
Yeah.
Where the head and neck area is very close to the nostrils.
Yeah, good point. You're right about that.
Then the clothes are infected with those tiny tapeworm eggs, and you take your clothes home, and now your family's exposed.
Yikes.
Huh. And most people don't know about this.
No. Great way to clear out the rural areas.
Exactly.
You know? And it's not even going to jam up the cities because the people won't live long enough to move.
Mm-mm.
Can't raise cattle, can't raise anything, you know, got to keep their kids inside. Then they all get these creepy tapeworms. How many people, do you have any idea, just from folks you've talked to, how prevalent?
We know of three people confirmed that have the disease. Very, very hard to speak to these people. I don't know what reason, but they're fearful of the retaliation from, especially in southeast Idaho, where most of your wolf supporters are. In the Sun Valley area, would be just rabidly attacking in public these folks that come forward.
The people who have the EG, the tapeworm?
Yes. Anybody in the wolf arena, whether being affected by wolves or protecting wolves, it's a vicious fight going on every day in the Northern Rocky Mountains. Absolutely horrific media campaign by the wolf supporters to discount anybody that tries to go against their agenda.
Wow.
Hey, so, you know, a little off topic, but, you know, one of the films that we recently watched by David Spady showed children behind, in enclosed cages in New Mexico at school bus stops waiting for their bus because the wolves would, you know, circle around them. Is that just happening in New Mexico?
At the moment, yes. And that was first reported by my friend Bruce Hemming. He produced a film called Undue Burden. He was actually the first guy to produce a film on the realities of living with wolves. And I tried to find some locations where I could get some footage of an enclosure that protects children, but there's none built that I know of in Idaho, but I know that wolf tracks are seen on a regular basis right at these locations. I mean, where children get on the bus. It's not a matter of if it's going to happen. It's a matter of when.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. And meanwhile,
there will be a child or God forbid, a mother of a child or both killed by wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. There was video. There was video of a mom. I remember in that wolves in government clothing clip. I think you can find that. I think people can find that online. But there was a mom who videotaped a wolf that just kept circling their car. Mm-hmm. Her kid was throwing up, I guess, her 3-year-old, and she left the door of her SUV open, and there was the wolf right at the door.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so much for being frightened of humans.
They're not.
Absolutely not.
No, last week, a woman walked out of her home with her daughter to take her to school, and a pack of wolves ran in on her. She ran back in the house. She was almost to the car, but she ran back in the house, and the wolves disappeared out of her eyesight. So later, a few minutes later, she made her way to the car. As she got in the car, the wolves came back and surrounded the car. She called the Fish and Game Department or the Sheriff's Department. I'm still trying to get the 911 tapes to that.
Mm-hmm.
And the sheriff and the Fish and Game claim they came back and killed five of the wolves, but we can find no evidence that they did anything.
Yeah. Now, is gunfire effective on deterring wolves?
Absolutely not. I've tried it firsthand myself.
And my reason for asking that is if you've got a concealed carry and you've got your weapon with you and you fire it into the air or into the ground, you know, if that would help.
No, you aim to kill, period. Don't ever fire above a wolf.
And
if they're surrounding you, you are food to them.
Sure. And then what's your penalty up there?
No, there's no penalty. We passed HB 343.
And so that ended that for you, mm-hmm. with the state and the feds.
Well, and they're delisted in Idaho also. But even prior to the delisting, when we had HB 343 passed, that was one of the reasons we pushed to have that bill passed, is for protection of humans. I just filmed a woman in north central Idaho that was attacked by wolves in a driveway. And she also testified at that same hearing to have that passed. But
now,
the people, basically, their hands are tied.
Are there any other states in the western United States that have passed a similar legislation? Or are you guys it?
We're it.
Mm. Hmm. Are you a prototype for any other states? Do you know of any other state legislatures looking at that?
I have heard through the grapevine, through the Patriot Networks out there, that they've looked at our passage of that law, and Phil Hart, when I was working with him as a state rep, it was brilliant on their part by moving it through. But
mm-hmm.
it's something that every state should look at,
mm-hmm.
because the individual right to protect yourself is being trampled by the Endangered Species Act, and this whole wolf thing, it is such a fraud on every level. Let alone calling a wolf endangered when there's hundreds of thousands of them in North America alone. There's at least 70,000. And it's just insane to think that the people, how many people are in California now? 35 million?
Yeah, give or take a couple of million. I mean, documented or undocumented.
Cope with wolf population that's going to bear down on them. Mm-hmm. They won't be able to.
No, they absolutely won't. And in our end of the state, I mean, it'll go like a hot knife through butter. Shoot,
yeah.
On that happy note, hey, we've got to take a really quick break here. We've got to jam in some breaks at the end. Thank our advertisers. We'll be right back with Scott Rockholm here on We the People Radio at KCNR 1460 AM.
I probably couldn't understand that.
I was going to say, what listening speed do you do when you try to figure out what the words were?
Radiohead there. The first line was, I keep the wolves from the door.
Oh, gotcha. There you go. I knew there was something in there.
So we're back to another cheery and uplifting
episode.
Program. I was going to say episode.
Yeah, it's another episode. I know people are like, what are you guys myopically focused on wolves for? Because it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And honestly, Scott, once it takes over your state, it's just going to fix it is just, I mean, it's just gigantic. How long have you guys been fighting this?
Some have been fighting it since 1995. The Anti-Wolf Coalition, when they formed, they were first in Idaho. and Robert Fanning's group, Friends of the Northern Yellowstone Elk Herd, began, I believe, in 2003. Could have been earlier, but I'm just off the top of my head thinking. But I've been in this since 2006.
Wow. So are they having any problems in Colorado?
They're not yet. But what I uncovered was, this last winter I testified at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service hearing on listing of wolverines, where I was present to inform these brilliant thinkers that effects of wolves' predation on wolverines is going to create an extinction itself, and they'd never even considered that. But what I uncovered was that there was an active breeding program through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Washington State where they're using these breeders to supply wolves for moving them to other states. Although there's not an official program to infest Colorado, Utah, or California with wolves, they are. And that was just revealed last week where they're taking them far south into Utah. So there's unofficially, he won't read it anywhere, but yes, they are actively moving wolves around just like they did here in Idaho.
Nice. And their excuse for that is what? That we just need to get the balance back in nature? And is that the same kind of crap you guys hear up there?
They don't have an excuse. They have an agenda, and they're just sticking to the agenda. Our enemy is real good at it. It's our side that fails.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're good at sticking right to the, they stick like glue to that agenda, and they push it forward. They're going to have wolves in every state because it's a part of their plan for Agenda 21,
mm-hmm.
rewilding,
sure.
The West, and the Wildlands Project.
Yeah, and for
that's part of the agenda.
Yeah, for all the people who think that's you'll get some pushback from folks, and they'll say, oh, well, that's not really happening. And we all, of course, know that that's a joke. But the Wildlands Project map that Dr. Michael Kaufman did, I brought that out at a meeting the other night because we were talking about, you know, all these different things that are going on and shutting all the roads. And I had some guys who, you know, they said, what are they doing this for? And so I have a California section of that blown up really, really large. So I said, hey, I've got a map in my truck I want you to take a look at. So there we were, you know, in the cold out in the, you know, middle of nowhere under a little flashlight looking at this map. And you should have seen these guys' face.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people don't know about that.
Well, and the Forest Service now, and I think they used the government shutdown as an excuse, but I know some private landowners up above the Sacramento area, I'm trying to think of just up in the hills above Sacramento, there's a lot of private landowners. They have nice property up there. And there was a gentleman that attempted to access his private property because he's got a forest road easement that runs with his property. And you now have to get a permit from the Forest Service to go onto your own private property if you're surrounded by Forest Service land.
That's correct. I was asked to come down and help those individuals down there.
Oh, you were? Good.
Yes. And until enough people stand up and walk in the room and say no, this march by federal, state, county employees to push this mm-hmm. agenda is going forward, period. And
you know,
the tentacles of biology, studies and all of this work that's being conducted by the Forest Service, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, BLM, and private agencies is nothing more than white sheets that are shared between them. They all read the same information, and then they call it fact.
Mm-hmm.
And so then our lawmakers use that as the tool to allow it to happen.
You know, there is one silver lining here. You know, these wolf packs might polish off the drug cartels. Think about that.
That will happen.
I know.
Yeah, we don't have a huge drug trade up in the Northern Rockies. It's just impossible to cross this country up here.
Yeah. Oh, Erin's having a coughing fit there. She's okay. She's a little red.
You
can't say ate the drug cartels right when I'm drinking coffee. She tried to kill me. Timing's everything.
Oh, she needed to give me the red flag.
So where in Utah are they dumping these wolves?
Oh, shoot. I just had it the other day. I want to say it's Logan, somewhere around Logan.
Mm-hmm.
U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service issued a statement through a local media. They slipped up. And usually they don't put that out there. But they slipped up, and the head of the Idaho head office in Boise of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, or Wildlife Services through USDA, made a statement in the paper where they claim, yeah, wolves are south of I-84, which is south of Boise, and we've actually moved them as far south as Logan, Utah. I believe it's Logan or somewhere close to there.
Now, is Logan, is that northern Utah or is that central?
That's north central. It's right in the mountainous area.
Oh, okay.
Last week I tried to get more information. I called the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and of course they were closed. Mm-hmm. So while these guys were taking their 2-week vacation, I couldn't gather the information. I needed all file a FOIA request and ask for that documentation.
Are they introducing wolves into any of the mountainous areas in Southern California?
I don't have any facts of any movement whatsoever. But there is no doubt that both federal agencies, state agencies, are manipulating the system and having their own top secret. I do have documentation of agencies that are working. If they have a wolf biologist on staff,
mm-hmm.
they have a program actively working.
Yeah. See, that's the thing.
California Fish and Game is a leviathan.
Yep.
Is a massive bureaucratic mess. And so to get through to find out what they're engaged in, I wouldn't have a clue as right yet.
Well, see, they're working on their working on their wolf management plan right now, and it's just a plan, just in case. I actually sat in on those meetings, and they actually look at you with a straight face
mm-hmm.
and tell you that they just are putting together the management plan, just in case, you know, some wolves come here. You know, they just want to be ready. They just want to be ready, but they're not bringing any wolves here. That's not going to happen. It doesn't have anything to do with that. It's like, oh my God. Really?
Yeah, management is a play on words.
Yeah, in this
day and age. No place on the planet do they manage wolves.
No. No. I mean, no. And for those people who are struggling to connect the dots on the Agenda 21 thing, or just think that the whole Wildlands project idea is nutty, and that, you know, especially if you live in California, go to scwildlands.org. And it takes 8,000 years for it to load, but I think it's like page 12-ish.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very far down. There is a lovely map of California, and if you print that and put it over the Wildlands map for California, the Wildlands map, the areas are red. Those are the no human use zones. On the California map, it's green, but they're the same zones.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, those zones match things like the area that they want to save for all the stupid frogs, you know, the latest stupid frog thing, that territory matches perfectly their mm-hmm. habitat, the habitat they need to save. Just so happens that's the part where they don't want us to be. So anyway, we've got to take one more quick break. We'll be right back with you in 2 minutes here at We the People Radio. We're starting to get all irritated. You can tell our time's almost up. We always get mad by the end. Check us out online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here at KCNR 1460 AM.
Yeah.
Uncle Bobby took me back 30 years.
That was fun.
Oh, it's done wonders for your skin.
Yes, it has. Hey, so Scott, this whole wolf management plan, where did it start? Did they start with New Mexico because New Mexico is so far advanced?
No, they had a meeting in the early 80s in Canada. The whole wolf agenda began with the IUCN, which is the United Nations. And
United Nations Agenda 21, yeah.
Yes, it's all tied into the Agenda 21, and it was a secret meeting. I've been trying to get the documents for quite some time, and I can't get them.
And so at the end of the day, the goal is just to shove us all into cities and get rid of private property. What a great way to ruin private property.
But here's my thought. You know, rural areas, I mean, eventually you end up in the cities, and, you know, the government can't manage a shopping list, so how are they going to keep the wolves out of the cities? I mean, if they think they can get everybody out of the rural areas and into the cities, how are they going to manage the wolf populations once they've let them explode?
Well, it's not possible. It's impossible, but as far as wolves in the cities, they're already there. Politicians.
Yeah.
It's actually more, we have more trouble with our with our bureaucrats than we do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the bureaucracy is the method by which they push all agendas, but yeah, that's what I wanted to get at.
Yeah, and that's the part that I think people don't understand, because even if you're elected people want to affect the bureaucracy, there are some, especially at the federal level, there are incredibly limiting rules that govern how you interact with the bureaucrats. I mean, you're not actually allowed to point out, as an elected official at the federal level, you're not allowed to point out that they've broken the law, because you're not a law enforcement agency.
But they are.
Yeah, I mean, so you wonder why they don't, because they can't. You're not allowed to do that. You've got to get a law enforcement, the law enforcement side to work on that. I'm actually working on a little project I'm hoping to be able to discuss pretty soon. I'm working on the law enforcement side to see how we can impact. I have a particular bureaucracy in mind, and I found somebody in law enforcement that actually had some really good ideas.
Nice.
But I got to tell you, the information is the hardest part. It's no easier to get for elected officials than it is for you. I mean, there's a guy who's been trying to speak with the CDC. He's a scientist, but it's about vaccine injury, and they just refuse to talk to him. And his congressman isn't able to make them talk to him. Crazy as that.
That's all by design.
Mm-hmm. It was just nuts. So how do you get all your information, Scott?
Oh, heck, you can just Google me. My information, as far as my film's concerned, I'll have it out there far and wide. I'll be putting it out to the Patriot groups and getting that out there. But mainly on Facebook, you can look up Save Western Wildlife on Facebook. It's a real active group of almost 10,000 people now, so it's growing quite rapidly.
Oh, good. Okay. And do you ever wind up coming into California at all?
I have been asked, and I haven't so far, but yes, I have planned on it. I just don't know when.
Okay. Well, we're in far northern California, so we expect you to call us if in fact you do. We would
love to
come. Yeah, we'd love to host you and do a film thing and have you speak and everything.
That'd
be awesome.
Thank you so much, Scott.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot. When your film comes out, keep us posted, okay?
You betcha. I'll get it right to you.
All right. Scott Rockholm. You guys heard it here first. Send the show out to your friends. Bob?
Yes.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Bye, Elizabeth. Bye,
Good
Bob.
Night.
See you next week. I don't know what we're talking about next week. Something. Probably wolves again.
All right.
Have a great weekend, guys.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you, ladies. This is KCNR Shasta Redding.